extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. From the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios, I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer. We got Michael LaHood, we got Tom Bogert. I'm not saying that we're going to the bench, guys. I'm saying that we got, you know, I needed difference makers in this show, so I called on those that I could count on. Coming up, big show here, Super Draft Takeaways, the MLS Super Draft 2022 presented by Adidas went down on Tuesday. Maybe you saw it, maybe you didn't. Well, we have the big takeaways for you. Transfer Rapid Fire with Tom Bogert. Tommy Scoops, always on the edge of things. We'll go deep on the biggest stories in MLS. From Toronto FC, stealing the offseason shine, first in senior. Now Michael Singh over there at Breaking Red tells us Jefferson Soteldo's on his way out, and El Tri and Tigres center back Carlos Salcedo's on his way in. That's big news. Bad news in Kansas City. Alan Pulido is out for the season. Ali Trost joins us to explain what comes next for Peter Vermees and Sporting. And the DP math in Atlanta is hard. It's tough. It might not work. You need some subtraction, I should say, there. Felipe Cardenas of The Athletic has the latest on Almada, Barco, and everything going on there. Welcome, guys. Tom, Michael, I have to start with this tweet. It has nothing to do with anything, but I cannot help but love this from you, Tom. Say, my dad arrived in Florida today for an Elite Over 60 soccer tournament. I repeat, an Elite Over 60 soccer tournament, which is legendary and what I hope to be doing in 35 years. 35 years is a long time away. Your dad is a legend. I need to do extra time from this tournament. I don't know if I can make it there. That's 25 years for me, and I'm not sure I'll get there. I need to go. I think this should be a World Cup situation of elite over 60 soccer players. There should be a documentary. Extra time should crowdfund it. This is amazing. Please tell me every detail you know about this soccer tournament.
First of all, I've already got Mike LaHood on the record saying that he's in for my team when we get to 60.
Yep,
it might be a while, but that's just a really good start, and preparation is key. So that
you should start building your team now. I mean, if we can get some guys that you think, you know, ligaments and joints and everything else are going to hold up in the MLS ranks, you come in there with a bunch of ringers and you just blow the elite over 60 soccer scene out of the freaking water. You just crush people.
Former pros or whatever, like my dad's team has been, you know, perennial challengers in the men's league circuit since my entire life, which I've always loved.
Every age category they have done.
It was funny how long he held on to over 30 and then reluctantly doing over 40, and then one time after he turned 55 it was like there's an over 55 tournament. I was like, that's a designation. I thought that this was over 40 than retirement. And now he got recruited into the over 60, like on his 60th birthday. There's like 14 teams, he's telling me. They're playing, these old men are playing 90-minute games, one a day. If you make the semifinals, you play two on Sunday. Imagine playing two 90-minute games in the Florida heat, even though it's January. And obviously they have title aspirations. It's, you know, win or bust. He's already plotted out.
Give me a team name. I need something to root for. Concrete.
He hasn't given me that. Maybe I'll have to report back to you on that. But there's 14 teams, four advance, and he's already said we need 9 points to assure that we're going through. Maybe we can get through with seven, but we're going
group
for
of death.
We're going to the group stage. We got to get out of here with nine.
This is legit. I have one question for you. Did they get him on GAM or TAM?
Ray Gaskill, a little veteran.
Okay.
He's a young guy now that I think about it. They
gotta be some great puns, by the way, on the names.
They're better.
If they're not great puns on the names or dad jokes, we're failing across the board. But I'm telling you, maybe our community can do it. Maybe another one can. A World Cup of elite over 60 soccer.
Ooh, I like this.
Televised.
Presented by,
you know, like ESPN the Ocho style, a documentary. We're crowdfunding this. We're telling the stories. Like, there are, God, I can't even imagine. I can't imagine. All right, let's get into it. Real soccer. I said real soccer? That's not fair. That's the realest soccer can be. That elite over 60 scene is as real as it gets. All right, Super Draft Breakdown. Maybe you watched the stream. I said maybe you didn't. Super Draft Tracker at MLSsoccer.com. So all the players, the profiles, all the news, the interviews, all the coverage that's happened since Tuesday. The number one pick belonged to Charlotte FC. We knew that. They held on to it. They went Ben Bender, number one, out of the University of Maryland. He's a Generation Adidas midfielder. Has been an attacking midfielder. I would think he'd be more of like an eight at this level, but we'll see how they end up using him. But there's some other big news around Charlotte. Like, literally right now as we record this, Tommy Scoops out here tweeting. Tell us what's going down in the Queen City.
Yeah, so as has been reported, or interest, but Middlesbrough and Charlotte FC are in the final stages of agreeing, of completely, they've already agreed, just in the final stages of it being completely done, a move for Riley McGree to go to Middlesbrough in the England Championship. Celtic had a deal agreed with him, but the talks broke down over personal terms. I don't have a final fee for you, but reports in Europe and a little bit here, I've pegged it at around like £5 million-ish, maybe up to £7 million with add-ons, which makes a lot of sense given that everybody I talked to about Riley McGree and in Charlotte and some people in England, that Birmingham City desperately wanted to keep him. And it was like, Charlotte aren't negotiating at all. We want Riley. We want to see him with our team. And I guess just these bids got too big to deny. And maybe there was some pressure from Riley in his camp, but I can't say that for sure. But yeah, Riley McGree will not play a game for Charlotte FC. Goes down in the throes of legends like Tristan Blackman and Ismail Tejuri-Shradi in Charlotte FC history.
Can you tell how much did they buy him for? Remind us.
I think it was like $2.5 million. It was some
so,
like
okay. They oh, that's wow. dollars. $2.5 million.
Yes.
£5 million sterling is current translation. If it is about $7 million. Yeah. And if it would be $7 million again, pound sterling, that would be almost $10 million
wow. with add-ons. For that'd a player, be with add-ons you, if it's up to
either way. Stop trying to poo-poo this talk. They bought him for a small number. Yes. They're going to sell him for a much larger number without him ever coming.
Wow!
They get the allocation money, what the million or whatever it is, and the rest would come in. Where for you, as you talk to people around the league and talk to Charlotte, like this. This is an incredible deal. Like, if you're an expansion team and you're not looking at this in the future and, you know, however many more come in, Las Vegas, if they do, or whoever, you have to be looking at this and thinking, I got to play middleman. I've got to generate GAM in some way. I've got to get guys ahead of time that will grow in value and I can have on loan that become, like, value generators for my expansion build. Like, this is huge.
Yeah, I mean, what's unique about this is that Charlotte were agreed, and Sergio Ruiz, they weren't necessarily aiming to sign players so early. Like, they were open to it, obviously, by signing, but it was like, these are two deals that are too good for us to turn down because of the market is depressed because of COVID-19 and the pandemic. So this maybe isn't necessarily replicable, but it's definitely a good idea, as you point out, that, you know, if you have the funds there and you're, you know, willing to, I guess, take that risk and sign somebody and put out the money, like, a year and a half before you go into play, like, it's not bad. And the ramp up time, and St. Louis will be looking at this. They expect to be active this summer. The ramp up time, if you've got infrastructure in place, you can just wait and choose and pick the right deals and whatever, you know, if something screams like big, big value to you, you can do it. Or you just wait and you start signing players as you get closer to your build.
We'll see what happens, but that's nice for Charlotte. It'd be maybe nicer for them in year one to have Riley McGree, but allocation money, pretty good as well. What did you think of Ben Bender, Michael, number one overall? Was that the right pick, you thought, in terms of talent and upside?
They look like geniuses now, knowing that this Riley McGree move was a potential, and now it looks like it's so close to being across the line. We talked about it. Sometimes your number one pick is the most talented player and you get him. When I was at Philadelphia Union, Andre Blake was by far the best player in that draft. And we're seeing the dividends paid. We had enough goalkeepers, but they just couldn't pass up a goalkeeper like that and a player like that because they thought of the future. But in this case, two things are true. This is a needs-based number one pick, and he is a good player. Make no mistake about that as well. He is more of a box-to-box midfielder at the next level in Major League Soccer. He's a runner. He likes to make those deep-lying runs. He times his runs well. He's a left-footed player, left-footed attack-minded midfielder, and he's got a good eye for goal, can mix it up, whether it's finding the bottom corner or picking the top corner, and I was impressed at how he combines with teammates. He's not one-dimensional in just running. He'll look to combine if it's a deep-sitting back line. That was at college, so he'll have to develop his game and be more dynamic. Physically, there's some question marks about that. How will he stack up physically? He's 6 feet tall, but he's a bit wiry. But this is why you get him in the gym, you bulk him up, keep him away from the Carolina barbecue. If anything, the barbecue's too good to pass up. But for a young player like this, get him fit, get him strong, and he'll be good to go.
All right, you spent some time in California. in the Carolina yourself. All right, top 10, or I'll give you the top five here, and maybe we'll run you through the rest of it, and you can go to MLSsoccer.com for the rest. Ben Bender, as we said, to Charlotte, number one. Roman Celentano, the goalkeeper out of Indiana, to FC Cincinnati at two. Isaiah Parker, three, to Dallas out of St. Louis. Might be a winger, might be an outside back or a wing back, TBD on that one, but Dallas had traded into that spot from Toronto. basically to buy out Dom Dwyer, and you'd think that'd mean to buy out Josie. We'll talk to Michael Singh about that later in the show here. Thor Jofarsson to Houston, the Duke out of the forward out of Duke that he came across your radar, I'm sure, for what he did against UCLA in the tournament. Has some banter to him. And Kip Keller, another generation he does five to Austin. Five generation to do this off the top, so that's a trend. I'm going to, as I give sort of my overall feel trend takeaway from the day, which was an insane one, thank you to everybody who watched the Super Draft. Thank you to everybody behind the scenes and in front of a camera on that thing. It is the most incredible show of the year that we do. It is a lot. There are so many things that go into that, and to do it all live, kudos to everybody. I had a great time doing it. My big takeaway is, you know, you're going to hate the narrative if you hate my narrative thoughts out there, but people like to poo-poo the Super Draft, say how much it means, say it's not worthwhile, whatever. You know, look, soccer terms, it's been disproven in the era of TAM. We know that. There are huge names. There are million-dollar transfer fees. There's TAM and GAM flying around the league for these guys. It is not a critical mass thing, so you're not going to see, you know, whatever it is, 28 times 3 and then extra picks coming. Those players are not all going to make it. Luckily, now they have a better chance to make it. And MLS Next Pro should help with that, but there will be players that come out of it. But most importantly, man, look at what it means to these kids and their families and their coaches and everybody involved in their lives up to that point. Even if you want to sit here and be like, this guy probably isn't going to make my team. Like, watch them cry with their families and tell me that this doesn't matter. You can quibble with me about how it's done or whatever, but I can't see a world in which the Super Draft shouldn't be a part of our ecosystem here. Think of Farai Mutatu and his parents on Zoom and what happened in that room when Farai saw his mom and his dad's face smiling back at him. The message they were able to send in that moment, the fist pump and the bender pick from the older brother in the back when he thanked him. And you know that his older brother just like probably whooped his ass for 10 years. You know what I mean? Like, he's part of that development as a player. Those are the moments. And so I just want us all to, like, instead of being so deep in our little soccer world and are like, yeah, but an MLS would be better if, and, well, that doesn't matter, X, Y, Z. Like, these are kids that have worked their entire life to get to a point. And to hear your name called like that and to share that with your family and your parents and your coaches and your teammates or your twin brother, depending on who you are in this draft, they will never forget that. That will be important to them and their family forever. It changes their life. It changes their perception of themselves, even if they don't make it. The validation of being drafted in that way, of all those years and that hard work. Sorry, that's the end of my rant. I just, every year at this time, I'm like, man, like, come on, people, have a little bit more perspective than like the MLS vortex. You don't have to be inside it all the time. My other takeaway, Chicago Fire had a nice day. Good day for them. They need good days. And I thought the Kendall Burke pick and the way they picked up allocation money throughout to move down is good. Burke is about to go on trial or training or whatever you want to call it with some championship teams. Good center back. To say, you know what, we're going to take a chance. That sort of bet, I think, is what the Super Draft is about trying to get him in there. Who knows what's going to happen? You know, he's a really good player who can impact your team potentially. Again, that's the big word, potentially. Go out and do it. All right, I've taken too much time. Michael, you're a much bigger college soccer expert than I will ever be. What was your overall trend that you thought stood out in this draft?
Coming into this draft, there were a few attacking players, the Ben Benders, the Osenia Buddhas, but really the stars of the draft were defensive players, center backs in particular. I think of a Kip Keller, because I'd taken, I'm going to make this comment with only zero lenses of the Verde glasses on. They got it right with getting Kip Keller. I think a team like Austin FC was surprised. I was surprised to see him go fifth. I thought FC Cincinnati would have benefited from picking him. They're in need of depth at center back. But the overall theme is you're seeing a shift in MLS teams. They are starting to trust American and domestic center backs, and it shows the value of the draft. Look at New England Revolution. Their entire back line were Super Draft picks, and their entire back line, first round Super Draft picks, and the majority of them, I think, were in the top 10. And for all of the offensive talent, Carlos Hill, league MVP, Gustavo Bo scoring golazo after golazo, and Adam Buxa, the B team up top.
Maybe the Serie B team soon.
Yeah, Serie B. Yeah, pun intended.
I'm in the over 60 league when it comes to dad jokes. So.
But you see a future for a recipe for success of you get international stars to lead the lines, and then your back lines, you get domestic talent from the college level. They grew, these are players who grew up watching Major League Soccer. Some of their heroes are now Major League Soccer players, and they can identify with the league more. And so I love everything about it from the draft standpoint and the opportunity that these young defenders now have to prove.
8 out of 14, top of the draft, center backs. 8 out of 14. That tells you something about what teams thought about who had the best ability to impact their rosters, whether it be this year or in others. What about you, Tom? What'd you think was the trend, the story that you're like, oh, that's interesting, that people should think about that?
Yeah, as you noted, that the first five picks were all Generation Adidas, which shouldn't be surprising, one, because the idea behind Generation Adidas is to sign the best prospects in the draft. So it looks like that the league and the clubs were kind of aligned on which players that was. But also the cap ramifications of having these players that don't count against your budget, and I believe supplementary or whatever it is. These are guys who can get more value out of them on the roster in rather than using a senior spot or using somebody who counts against the cap. Obviously these contracts for any even non-GA players are not very big given the state of the draft and where this money usually is, but it's still every dollar counts, and that gives you, you know, another $100,000 to add to, you know, another player on your roster.
All right, best top 10 pick you thought, or best like fit pick in the top 10. Michael, what did you think?
I got to meet this player at the combine, and we joked about it at the super draft. And it's Matthew Noseda, Los Angeles native, Naval Academy graduate, and 6'8". That's all you got to say. You don't see that coming through Major League Soccer often, and he's going to the right team, New York Red Bull. He's a good player. He can pass on the ground. He can play between the lines. Red Bull, they're known for possessing, but they're also known for that high press. He's playing along. He'll have the opportunity to play alongside Aaron Long, experienced defender and U.S. national team defender. So he'll learn and grow alongside Aaron Long. And the Red Bull, they're susceptible defensively on set pieces, not anymore. 6'8". I'll say that again.
I saw
you got to go get that kid.
Michael got a picture standing next to him, and it's like you might not have been able to touch the top of his head, like reaching up on that. The other thing, like, hey, he's a Red Bull system guy, and you know he's in the Navy. He understands the system. He's ready to get behind, you know, the collective side of this game. They traded up to get him, so you always like that where teams are saying, hey, not only do we think you're a great fit, we've expended resources to get you. We have something invested. The other nice thing, I think, is that you don't have to rely on him. Like, it's not like you got to throw him out on the field. Aaron Long is coming back. That's a perfect situation. It's one of the best stories of this like little preseason zone for me, whether it's the U.S. national team where he is right now or back with the Red Bulls. Sean Nealis was a darn near best 11 defender probably last year. Mm-hmm. And then you have the youngster in Reyes. And if you're going to play a three-man back line, you probably have your starters. And then you have Noseda who can kind of learn and grow and come up underneath them. So I like that pick a lot. What about you fit-wise, Tom? What's a good fit, do you think?
I thought Ahmed Longmire going to Nashville was pretty good because Nashville have proven already in just a couple years that they've found value in the draft with Jack Meyer and Alistair Johnson, who I believe they traded up to get Johnson as well. And so they moved up pretty big to get Longmire. Eiko Parra joined the club as a scout. Eiko Parra, based on reporting, and I believe GM Mike Jacobs was saying this, Eiko Parra was really big on Ahmed Longmire. So that's a good feather in your cap for that kid, for somebody like Eiko Parra to speak so highly of him. And the club were speaking really highly of him, you know, as you'd expect, but it sounded like he was at the top, if not toward the top of their board for center backs and overall players, and they got him at number 10. So I think that's a really good fit.
I'm going to go Erickson Centeno, by the way, just because I think he's the last GA available, and he's not in the top 10. He's down a little bit to Atlanta United. But if we're talking about fit and timing, he's going to be behind Brooks Lennon, and I would guess that they'll make him a wing back. Mm-hmm. That's like a perfect development phase zone for him. First of all, he's on GA. He'll stick around on that roster. They won't have any urgency or rush to need to move him on. He'll have time to develop, and then he'll have time to do so under a guy that's a league standout in that position. One guy we haven't talked about here, Michael, is Osini Buda.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of stories, his story is, you know, Frei Mutatu's moment, and his story is just absolutely incredible. And so is Osini Buda's out of, you know, from Burkina Faso, from Ouagadougou to, you know, Ghana and right to Dream, and then to the Millbrook School in Greenwich, Connecticut, and over to Stanford, and then was falling, I mean, on talent at least, because we know attacking-wise he might be the most talented player in this entire draft.
Yeah.
He falls, and then he goes to San Jose, and his strengths are like 1v1 ability, open field, like, and he gets into a system that feels like could be a pretty solid fit for him, and it's right down the road from when we played college soccer.
There's no place like home. San Jose, they must be just licking their lips thinking about the potential of this player. And that's what I think of when I think of Osenya Buda, a lot of potential. 1v1, he is the best 1v1 attacker that was available in the draft. Most talented individual talent. San Jose, think of the Christian Espinozas, who when fit, he is one of the best assist players in the league and wingers, providers in the league. But say Christian Espinoza can't play for whatever reason, you have a player that is an impact player you can put in the system. He'll defend too. Matias Almeida's team, they go man v man. No other team does it when they go to press you. They play that high line. Now on the counter in transition, you have another player. Think of the Cade Cowles. This guy has speed as well. Cade Cowles is just rapid off the ball. He can push it by you and run, but he's more of a runner in behind. Osenya Buda, he is faster with the ball. And when he gets in the final third, he'll go to goal. He'll like to go to his right foot, very much right footed, but shift it to his right foot and then try and find the bottom left corner of the goalkeeper's right. But if not, if it's not on, he can function as an out and out winger, get to the byline, and he makes really good decisions in the final third in the box, trying to cut it back. Jeremy Obobese, you could be thanking this player at the end of the season for your goals.
We will see. I mean, we don't want to put too much pressure on these kids, but
yeah,
you know, it takes time sometimes. So, you know, I kind of wrote before the Super Draft to give the 2011 or 2021, excuse me, class a little bit of, I give them a little time, a little breathing room, because it not only is it in a pandemic, but I don't think we're at a point in this league where most players are going to come in and dominate or even be starters right away. You saw that with Daryl, DK, and Tajon Buchanan. Like, you know, have some expectation, have some hope for these guys, but also give them the room to grow. And I think the best thing about what's going to happen this year in that sense is MLS Next Pro, and we're still learning about that. We're still trying to glean details. I think before we move on here and get to some of the bigger transfer news that is going to impact first teams probably more consistently, Michael, I just want to hear from you, because we talked a lot over the course of the last week or two about the beginning of your career, but I don't know much about what happened with you and how you feel about what happened after that. I mean, Chivas drafts you, you're there, you're with the Union, you're with the Cosmos for a hot second, wonderful games, I'm sure, and Miami FC, NASL once again, USL with Cincinnati and San Antonio, international with Sierra Leone. Like, you've seen a lot, you've seen a lot of players and been with a lot of players who've seen a lot. What is MLS Next Pro in the ideal world from a player's perspective? Like, what do you hope it could be?
It's another opportunity. And Major League Soccer has changed so much from when I was growing up playing U.S. club soccer and then going to college at Wake Forest University, which I've been waiting. We talked Alistair Johnson. Got to give my shout. I know.
You might have just like hit a workout. And I was like, is this just like his workout gear? Like he's just fitting it all in. The Wake was underneath the camera line during this podcast for those watching on YouTube. So yeah. I'm learning as you are.
Game worn from his last college game, unwashed.
Yeah. Well, this is still, I might have to put some Febreze after. Thanks for giving me all that credit there.
I hope it's washed.
But when I saw the development of academies, I thought that was a game changer, and we're seeing it. NYCFC, they're showing it. Other academies throughout the league, they're showing the benefit of having academies. But when I think of MLS Next Pro, I think of these college soccer players. So often we see college soccer players fall through the cracks, and it'll give validation to the Super Draft, and it'll give added value to the Super Draft. Not only do you get the rights to a player that you get through the draft, now they're going to be in the MLS ecosystem. It's not, okay, you're drafted by the league and then you follow the ecosystem and you go to USL. You are still within. So you get to grow and develop, but you also get to grow and develop through a team's playing style and identity. And this is a long season in Major League Soccer. Injuries come, players lose form, players get transferred, and you now can go in almost a farm system. You can go and get a player whenever you need them. And it's not reinventing the wheel. It's not teaching a player a system they don't know. They just need time. And you said it best, Andrew, of so many young players, they just need time. Players develop at different speeds. Physically, a lot of these guys are still developing. And in a few years, I'm excited to see which one of these players that go to MLS Next Pro, how they impact a Major League Soccer team.
I mean, I just think, you know, we're going to talk about Graham Zusi in a little bit, for instance, with Ali Trost, and he re-signed in Kansas City, one club man, but he was not a starter when he got in. Out of a national, like a national championship quality team in Maryland, was not even close to a starter on those early, on those Wizards teams back in that era, worked his way into this career we see now. But like, there are more guys like that. The more players like that that we can cultivate and produce and have within our system, our league, our national team, like, we need to try to maximize talent everywhere. Like, that's the whole challenge with the U.S. So that's the super draft, the quick version of it on our side, at least. I'm just going to throw one name out I'm excited for. Mo Omar going to Colorado. I mean, I don't know. Mayaka hasn't – we haven't seen hardly anything of him. But, you know, maybe those are guys that push up in if Cole Bassett moves or if they sell somebody else. I don't know. But I liked that pick. I think he's a good player. Could be a center back in their back three as well. Let's say they move Austin Trusty. A good project pick there for Robin Fraser. You got a name? Just a quick name? I don't even need analysis. Just one to watch from the second and third round, Michael.
I got to see this player play quite a bit during the college season. Pedro Fonseca, I was surprised that he was picked as late as he was, but he's going to the right team, Real Salt Lake. They're dependent on their wingers. We're a player that we're going to talk about in a bit with Albert Rusnak, a free agent and pending move elsewhere in the league. Real Salt Lake, they're probably going to change their formation. Demir Krylak is the main man now. He will most likely be the captain. So you're good up front. Bobby Wood and Rubio Rubin, they're going to be leading the line. But now you have a player that you can bring in that has depth, adds depth to this roster. They have speedy wingers. What I like about him is he's so crafty. He brings that Samba Brazilian style, not just beating you to his left, but he can go both directions and shoot with either foot. And that makes you an asset when you're versatile like that.
We'll see if he can break through. That's the challenge for all these guys. It kind of starts now for them at professional level. You get that moment of validation, and then you got to go do it. All right, news around the league. Taylor Twellman tweeted it, and then Austin FC reported and said, hey, this is official. They have finalized an agreement with 25-year-old defensive midfielder Johan Valencia from Colombian champions Deportivo Cali. Seven-figure transfer fee involved, says Twellman. What do you think about this signing, Michael?
It could prove to be their most important signing for 2022, coupled with what they do at the back. With Valencia, you get a proven winner just coming off a first division championship in Colombia, but you get a mobile defensive midfielder who's hungry. What he does best, he tackles the living bleep out of people. Mm. He's aggressive and athletic, yes, but he's a smart soccer player. He reads the game so well, and when he leaves his foot, the timing of his tackles is really important. It changes Austin FC's potential formation, what they can do with the likes of an Alex Ring. Maybe Alex Ring stays as a six, maybe he pushes up as an eight, which we've seen in 2021. And Sebastian Driussi, this is the type of guy that you could end up thanking for the freedom that you get to attack.
Freedom!
Yeah, freedom. Now you get to attack knowing that you have a guy behind you who can cover so much ground and transition. Austin FC, they're at their best in transition when they were on. Now, still, the back line needs to be addressed. They did that a bit in the draft. Charlie Asensio, national champion with Clemson, coming in at left back, adding depth. Ben Sweat leaving to Sporting KC, and John Kolmanich was the only left back up until this point. Aiden Stanley had left as well. And the center back position is going to be crucial with another SKC guy and Austin FC player, Matt Beasler, retiring. So congratulations to him on a great career. But Kip Keller, his maturation and his development becomes so important for Austin FC because physically, he's one of the most physically gifted players. His test scores at the combine prove that, and he's a leader. But now he needs to learn Josh Wolf's style and that possession-oriented style that Austin FC like to play.
All right, we'll see what happens with them. But that could be a big signing. Every good team in this league, look at the six. Look at the six. I mean, every good team. Every team that wins trophies, they got it. I want a couple names here from you. I already threw some out. And tell me if I'm on the right track here, Tom. Inter Miami have the number one overall spot in the allocation order now. They got that in the Christian McCoon trade with Charlotte FC. So Charlotte FC get a young center back, and they have an opportunity now, Inter Miami, to make a move. I threw out right back because that is a big black hole on their roster right now. I mean, they are ripping the thing apart, understandably so. You have DeAndre Yedlin, who could be available. Reggie Cannon, who should be available. Like, come on, let's get him out of Boa Vista. Or Brian Reynolds, who's definitely available from Roma, but may want to stay with, like, an Anderlecht in MLS. Or number 10, Safir Tider. I would do it just a couple years, get you through. That'd be fun. Pity Martinez. Maybe we'll make a reference on that. Or, again, legend Poku on the allocation order list. What's the most right name that I threw out there right there?
I mean, just deducing, roster need and fit and Seattle connection, it'd be DeAndre Yedlin. Like, as far as I know, they didn't have a deal agreed with any player on the allocation order, including Yedlin, before making this trade. So I don't know if they had necessarily an explicit plan to go do so for Yedlin or somebody else, or if they just decided this asset was too good to pass up in the Christian Bakun trade. And they, I've already reported that Orlando are interested in making a play potentially for that spot. Who knows how much they'd have to pay to get up there? Or again, who knows if Miami already have the explicit idea of, no, we have our eyes on one player, we want to make, a deal happen here. Yeah, like you said, DeAndre Yedlin would make sense. Reggie Cannon would make sense for somebody who should be available. I'm really expecting Cannon to stay in Europe, maybe in the England Championship, where, before Boa Vista bought him, there were a lot of teams that haven't paid yet. But there are a lot of teams that haven't. There's a lot of teams in England that were really interested in Reggie. Brian Reynolds, I can imagine that Miami would want him, or he'd somebody who makes sense, but I'd be absolutely shocked if there was anything serious going on with MLS. There's talks with Anderlecht, which would seem the most likely destination, alone with a purchase option. Hull City are genuinely interested in him, and I believe they just got a new sporting director. And Club Bruges, anybody who Anderlecht is interested in, Club Bruges is as well, and goes vice versa. And Club Bruges also had, that's probably honestly where he should have been transferred from Dallas rather than Roma, but Club Bruges did come close to acquiring him originally. So those, I very much expect it to be one of those three teams rather than us trying to talk ourselves into Brian Reynolds coming to Miami or anywhere else in MLS.
I'll talk myself into anything I want to talk myself into, all right? I'll talk myself into any number of things. The Josh Sargent to Sporting Kansas City and Josie Altidore to Orlando City. You let my brain work, all right, Tom? We're going to get to Michael Singh in just a second to talk Toronto FC, and things are going on there, and we'll talk Josie as well. Jefferson Soteldo potentially out now, and then Carlos Salcedo in, so in just a second. But I want the one off-season story that you are watching the closest. And I guess I'll start on this one. And I said it a ton and during the Super Draft. It's Charlotte's DPs. They don't have a DP. An expansion team on January 13th with the season starting in a month and a half does not have a designated player. Like, I don't think we're talking about that enough. And I know that they are working diligently. And you heard it from Zoran Crneta on the Super Draft. Like, hey, we've got some stuff in the works here. It seems to be quiet right now, which is often not the case. But again, the expansion team for this year that's going to have 75,000 people in their stadium for opening day, who has talked about their ambition, who has an owner with that can go do these things, does not have a designated player. That's a huge story to watch. Tom, I know you're watching outgoing transfers, but we also had Diego Valeri on here. It's your choice. You want to talk outgoing transfers or Diego Valeri in his future? Up to you.
I'll go with Diego Valeri. As I reported this week, Lanús and Portland Timbers agreed to a deal to send Diego Valeri back to his boyhood club, the club that he was produced at. So that's a really cool story. His contract would have been too big. This has been an exit that both parties are kind of working on. The timing made sense. There had been interest from other MLS teams, but I think that this is the best resolution for player and club and everybody. For him to end his career at Lanús, I was hoping that he'd either retire in Portland or retire at Lanús. So for the narrative, for the nostalgia, for the romance, I think that's perfect. They are the deal's just about done. I'm not expecting it to be official or announced until next week, but they are talking legacy events for Diego, and to truly appreciate his time and everything that he's done. He is absolutely the blueprint of what you want for a DP in this league. He's a trailblazer. He's somebody who helped really open the market of Argentine players coming to MLS. There are not enough good words that you can say about Diego Valeri, the player in Portland, and Portland signing him and keeping him and everything else, just like with Diego Chara. But one of the talks is a testimonial game between Portland and Lanús for Valeri, which would be really cool. To my knowledge, there have been very few, if any, testimonial games in MLS. So I think that's a cool thing that they can kind of start. And then you look at other players, like maybe Ozzy Alonso has one in Seattle when everything's all said and done, things like this. Like, I hope that becomes more of the culture around here. And I think it's really cool that Portland are, appreciating this legend and giving him his due. And hopefully, again, that those deals are confirmed, finalized, and announced. But that'd be a really special event.
Who would you want a testimonial match for? That's what I'm asking everyone listening right now. Like, if you think about your club, the history of your club, your current club, who deserves this? 401-206-0-MLS. Text us, email us at extratime@mlssoccer.com. At Extra Time, we might put this one out on Twitter as well, because that's a good topic. Get you thinking on that. I will just say that it's awesome that he's going home and finishing there. I hope he comes back home at the end of all this, once he retires. And when I say home in that sense, I mean Portland, because that is truly one of his homes. And I hope that the club has plans to include him in whatever their future is. It just seems insane to me that Diego Valera, if he wants to be in Portland and he wants to help grow your club and your community, as he's repeatedly shown, that he wouldn't have a place to do so. And I hope that that is in the plans in the future. Like, you know, I've joked about a statue for him in the past. Like, whether it's a statue is great, but what would be better is the man in the flesh. You know what I mean? Like, putting his time, his energy, and his passion in your club. And he's done it for so long. I hope it happens after Lanús. And I hope the testimonial happens too. Michael, you wrote down in the pre is Rusnak to Seattle. Well, they're tweeting a video of a man tapping a watch. Very nice watch, by the way. Beautiful watch. Love the watch. And then a full sleeve tattoo that many have matched with their sleuthing abilities to Albert Rusnak. So it looks like this is done. Yeah, what do you think as it nears its conclusion here?
I think this, if they can get all the money and all the league metrics sorted, I think this is a game changer for them. Last year, he had a slow first half of the season, but when he is on, he's a baller. You get Rui Diaz up top, who can score goals, Nico Ladero underneath, and now Albert Rusnak. The Sounders, they leapfrog. I mean, they were really good last year already, and they just amazing. They become one of the favorites with a move like this, and it shows the power of free agency. And that's a topic that I'm looking forward to. With the international market being more of a depressed market, within MLS, look to free agency. I look at list of guys here, BWP. What's going to happen with him? He can still score goals. He showed that at LAFC when he's motivated. He's getting up there in age, but you have a goal scorer. Who's going to get him? Will Bruin. With Rusnak coming in, what's going to happen with him? Does he go back to Seattle? He's a guy that will get you goals. And gosh, Nick DeLeon, TFC, free agent as well. I know there's a revamp in the Great North up in Toronto, but he's an MLS vet. He's a guy that's going to compete in midfield. He can score some highlight reel goals, but I'm really interested to see what happens with free agency.
Yeah, more to come on that. Sebastian Blanco as well. All right, we got to get to the biggest news of today, at least, and we got to get to Michael Sings. All right, let's turn to the news of the day early on in my timeline. Michael Singh dropping a bomb at Michael Singh 94 covering Toronto FC. Sources say Michael, Toronto FC have reached a deal that will see Jefferson Soteldo depart the club after 9 months. In addition, he's confirming TFC will acquire Mexican international center back Carlos Salcedo from Tigres. You know him from way back in the day at RSL and, of course, in international stuff. It's an AT&T 5G call to the field to the six. Michael, what's up, man?
To the six. I like it. Hey, thanks for having me, though. Big fan of the show.
Hey, we're not as, you know, I'm not half Canadian like David claims to be, but, you know, I'm very interested in what's happening in Toronto right now, and you're leading the charge here. So tell us about what you reported this morning.
Yeah, for sure. So I reported that Jefferson Soteldo is on his way out at Toronto FC. It's been a move that's been in the making for quite some time, actually. I think overall, while he was, you know, he is a fantastic player, in my opinion, on the pitch, I don't think he wasn't meshing very well off the pitch with the team. So I think the team was shopping him from everything I've heard. And I got news that they've reached an agreement that will, you know, see Soteldo depart the club.
And to do so for Salcedo and to shore up the back line, that sounds pretty ideal.
Exactly. Yeah. So they'll be bringing in Carlos Salcedo, Mexican international. I'm sure is a player that a lot of MLS fans know very well because of his time at Real Salt Lake and what he's gone on to do since. And as you mentioned, there they shored up their back line, which was a big priority heading into this offseason, especially with the way the back line has been the past couple of years. And it's a massive move because it's a Bob Bradley move, in my opinion, and he's really kind of starting to put his mark on the club. You know, in the past, we've seen a lot of offensive weapons come in, but we never really saw a defensive stalwart like Carlos Salcedo come in. So a very big move, in my opinion.
I completely agree. In his prime as well, at 28, obviously knows the league. I think will be comfortable. And you mentioned there Bob putting his fingerprints on things. What's like the early vibe check under Bob Bradley in Toronto? I mean, this is maybe the biggest move of the offseason. You can talk about players, et cetera, but I think just perhaps overall, when you're talking about the future fate of a club, this might end up being the biggest move of this MLS offseason.
Yeah, and that's kind of what Bill Manning alluded to, is Bob Bradley was the first piece of the puzzle. And, you know, TFC, from where they were to where they, I guess, were last season, they were, to put it, you know, and straight up, they were in shambles. And this goes to the training sessions, this goes, obviously, their performances on the pitch, but the club really lost that identity. And Bob Bradley, from everything I've heard, he was brought in to kind of reinstate that culture. And you're going to, everyone in the locker room is going to be respecting Bob Bradley for everything that he's done throughout MLS, throughout his career. And that's sort of the vibe that I'm getting. This guy is a very serious person. He's a no-nonsense type of guy. And that's what this team sort of needed to kind of reset that culture and get Toronto FC back to where they want to be. And of course, that's an ambitious club that wants to be competing for trophies.
Yeah, ambition is, you're not going to question it after this Lorenzo Insigne stuff, right? I mean, that's ambition just like bottled. And I would assume they hope sold in Toronto, you know, like that's part of it. Bill Manning was talking about commercial appeal. We know about the soccer side of things. Insigne is world class. I wonder how you see this signing sort of in Toronto terms, in city terms, in soccer culture in your area. Like how big are these ripples? You know, we're down here in the States, and for MLS observers, we're like, oh my God, this is huge. Look at these numbers. Look at this profile. You know, just won the Euros. Napoli captain, all the goals, the assists, all the plaudits, 30 years old, Italian national team. Like, it's easy for us to get excited. How has it landed in Toronto?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And what I'll say is, you know, we've seen kind of this buzz before in terms of TFC going out, swinging for the fences, and landing a player like Jermaine Defoe, Sebastian Giovinco, Michael Bradley, and Jozy Altidore as well, some really big names. But I don't know if we've ever seen TFC go out and swing like this. Actually, I know we haven't seen TFC go out and swing like this. So as you mentioned there, the buzz, it's a buzz that's been lost for a couple of years. And that's kind of why Bill Manning sought out to really swing for the fences here and land big in Lorenzo Insigne, and people are excited. Toronto has a massive, massive Italian community, but bigger than that, they have a very passionate soccer fan base. And we saw that in the early years. We saw that 2015, 2016, 2017 when TFC were very good. And then it kind of dropped off. And of course, with TFC being out of market, not playing games in Toronto, they needed to do something to kind of get things back on track to where it was. And I think that's kind of what's happened so far. And I think a lot of people are very excited. Me personally, I'm excited. I want to go out there and I want to see Lorenzo Insigne just tear up Major League Soccer like he's touted to do. And I think that buzz is kind of back here in the city, and I'm hoping they can sort of build off that and surround him with a lot of solid pieces that can help him find success here in Major League Soccer.
How would you compare the buzz, the Giovinco versus the Insigne buzz? Like, is there a difference? Is there a, I don't know, like, do you have a story of, like, somebody who might be, I don't know, something, some sort of anecdotally that you've been like, oh, wow, that was weird. Like, that hadn't happened before. Or, like, this person's reaching out. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing is, you know, when Seba came over, he was a fringe national team player. Let's call it like it is. He wasn't that starter, that name, that household name that everyone knew. And as I mentioned here in Toronto, there's a lot of Italians. I have a lot of Italian friends that are reaching out to me, and they're just like, no. And I'm surprised they knew, you know, about this, because I didn't know their level of soccer fandom. And it stems really from watching the World Cup and the European Championships most recently, where they really learn about these players like Insigne. So I don't know, when Seba came, he had that same buzz. Obviously, TFC were coming off a little bit of a down season after 2014. So I think the biggest difference is there's a lot more casual fans that are taking notice because of the name, that commercial value that Lorenzo Insigne brings.
Giovinco laid the pathway, and Lorenzo's fallen right along. We won't see him till the summer. It's freezing here in Kansas City. I would take summer right now, probably, if you offered it to me. And I'm wondering what's being offered to Jozy Altidore. That's where we'll end this with you, Michael. What is happening with Jozy? Dom Dwyer is gone. That was a savvy MLS roster rule nerd move. Loved it. Now you get Dallas to buy out a guy you wanted to buy out, so potentially you could buy out Jozy. That was the writing on the wall. Is that the writing that you're reading as well, that Josie's going to be bought out here soon?
Yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. And, you know, it's Jozy Altidore, absolute club legend. I'll start by saying that. And really a legend in Major League Soccer. He, by far, is probably the best striker to have ever played for Toronto FC. And what he's accomplished, it can't be, I guess, overstated, really. So I am reading that same writing on the wall in the fact that I've heard that Jozy Altidore will not be back at Toronto FC as a designated player. And when you see that the team is making that transaction, giving up a decent piece of the third overall pick to get Dallas to buy out Dom Dwyer, preserving their own buyout, you can only assume that Jozy Altidore is probably next. So what I've heard is he actually won't be at training camp to begin with for Toronto FC as they kind of work through that process and finalize things. But I expect some news in the coming days, weeks, about Jozy Altidore's status here at Toronto FC.
I'm just going to throw some things out there. Nobody else is on with us right now, so they can't bat me down. Jozy Altidore, I'd love to see him in Liga MX. I've said this repeatedly. Like, it would be so fun to see him at an America or otherwise. But if he was to stay in Major League Soccer, which would be my preference personally, again, I just want to enjoy watching this league. I enjoy watching Jozy Altidore. I hope, like, massive hope, that he gets, that his body is right, that he is right. He seems personally absolutely right now in his personal life, that he comes in and just starts bossing again. Like, I would love that. Love to talk about it. Love to watch it every week. Can I just throw a name out? Orlando City. They need a center forward. I'm not saying this should happen or would happen or is likely to happen, but in team narrative and team chaos, Pato and Jozy as your number nines, maybe even playing together. I just can't help, but you're smiling right now. See, this is the way it works. You're smiling. How could you not smile at that? That could be beautiful. Oscar has like the Latin flavor. Jozy speaks Spanish. He's a Florida guy. Get him comfortable. Get him in the right spot. Get him a place where Sloan can obviously have a base and train. Like, this could work. Orlando need this. I need this. I don't know if Jozy needs this. I'm sure he's going somewhere, but that's my bully pulpit on that one.
Hey, he, like you said, he's a Florida guy. You know, he spends his off seasons in Florida. Maybe there is something there. Maybe we can maybe will that into the universe, and Jozy can be picking up the phone and calling Orlando City right now, saying, "Make it happen."
Talk it into existence, man. I appreciate you not just slapping me out of the sky on that one. I could hear in your voice, like, that could be something. Anyway, thank you, Michael Singh, for joining us. Follow his work at MLS, as well as he's the managing editor at Waking the Red, who do great work. Love SB Nation, everything they do. I follow every single one of those blogs, so big thanks to you. We'll have you on Power Rankings, I'm sure, coming up very soon. Tell the people how they can follow you otherwise, though.
For sure, yeah. As you mentioned there, at MichaelSing94 on Twitter. And I just want to give a quick shout out to my friends at The Parlay, who I do some great work for, create some great content. I do a daily show for them, and we talk some Toronto FC all the time. So keep it locked to them on Twitter, on all their socials, at The Parlay.
Awesome, man. Appreciate your time.
All right, thanks.
Big thanks to Michael Singh for making his ETR debut. Toronto FC is going to be one of the most fascinating stories in the entire league this season, and probably beyond as well. All right, Tom, before we get to Ali on Alan Pulido, I need some nitty-gritty on you on this one. We have a question from Kyle Killian. Says, how does Sporting deal with the roster implications of a DP being unavailable for an entire season and the marketplace for replacement nines? Basically saying, do we lose a DP spot? Like, are we out of it? Could they put him on, you know, I know MLS rules pretty darn well, and I'm not entirely sure. Could they put him on injured reserve or whatever that is and get that DP spot back, or no?
No, they can't, in the short answer. So they're just going to wait. And they're 95% sure that he's out for the entire season, but he's having a surgery this week. Post-op, they're going to do a check-in because they don't need to make this decision until like roster compliance date or whatever. Or I don't even think that that's a deadline, but they would do it as soon as they can. But maybe they'll get lucky, or that they're holding out 5% hope that maybe he can return at the end of the season. But again, overwhelming expectation that he's not. So they would likely put him on the season-ending injured list, which would be the finality of he cannot come back even if he has a crazy ahead-of-schedule recovery and he'd be ready by October or September or whatever it is. So the finality of that would open up his international roster spot. It would open up a senior roster spot. It would not open a DP spot. And I think the cap relief would only be the senior minimum, so an extra $110,000, which, again, that's better than nothing, but again, they cannot sign another DP, and they can't sign another max player or whatever that they didn't already have the cap room open for, so they get a little bit of relief with the international roster spot would be the biggest part of that, but yeah, it's a really unfortunate situation.
Stupid idea that I stupidly tweeted or didn't. Josh Sargent, I mean, probably would need a DP spot, but maybe you could find a way to do this. Like, is there a, in your mind, can you imagine a world where he's 21, you 22?
There you go.
Just saying, well, it's not going well at Norwich. It's not going well. Maybe they loan him.
Right.
Or maybe loan him because they say, you playing, getting experience, maybe that one could get you back in the U.S. national team fold, get you some semblance of confidence. Sporting Kansas City are desperate for a striker. I don't know that he has shown himself necessarily to be a goal scorer in the past, but maybe this is the opportunity with Shallowy and with Russell feeding him. And for team narrative, it's wonderful. It's just a really fun thing to watch and think about.
I love the idea, but the U22, to be eligible for U22 initiative, you need to be making under the max budget, which is like $630,000
or $612,000. Maybe Norwich, who are already on the hook, says, all right, to get him over there, we will do.
Hey,
we will handle the rest of that salary.
It's not a bad idea. I would like to speak this into existence, but yeah, unlikely. But I would definitely like that.
Yeah, join me in speaking into existence. I'm going to need you to be a little bit more positive about it instead of throwing a wet blanket over it. But that's neither here nor there. All right, it's an AT&T 5G call to the field, but we're not calling very far. Just a little farther north than I am in Kansas City. Allie Trost, you see her on the sidelines for Sporting Kansas City. She is a purveyor of Sporting Kansas City content, and we love it. Allie, what's up?
Hey, guys. I'm doing well, Weeby. It was so funny when you texted me yesterday about coming on, and I was trying to do the math in my head. Okay, East Coast, what time? And you're like, no, we're in the same
exactly.
time zone here now. So
the time zone.
It.
Everyone
time
knows
zone.
Central time zone first. It's the new initiative here in 2022. It's my New Year's resolution on extra time. So if you hear me say a time, it's Central time.
I love it. I can get behind that.
People have to figure it out. All right, Alan Pulido. We just got done talking about it with the guys. This is not the news that anybody wanted to hear. In fact, I was flying back from the Super Draft, and there were some Sporting KC fans behind me, and I turned around and I said, hey, tough day for you, right? And they immediately said, oh, Pulido. Pulido. How are you feeling? How's it feeling around the club? What's this mean?
Yeah, you know, I haven't had a chance to really talk with many of the guys about it just yet. You know, Peter obviously dropped a bombshell in his press conference of the many different bits of news that he shared, and that was hands down the biggest. But yeah, I mean, it sucks, right? Like that is their guy up top, and they're going to be without him for likely the entire 2022 season. Fans, I think, have already been pretty disappointed because there hasn't been a lot of Alan Pulido in the last couple of seasons either. And most notably missing out on the 2020 playoffs, 2021, not being able to play until the loss to RSL. And so it's just kind of been disappointing, but when he's been on the field, he's been amazing for Sporting Kansas City. So that's, you know, the disappointing
that's why it's extra
part,
disappointing, right? Like
extra disappointing is
what
that,
could have,
you know,
been, what could be.
Exactly. And I think it's just, you know, we see the Sporting Kansas City team have so much success this last season, just barely miss out on that number one, see that first finish in the Western Conference. And you'd have to think having Alan Pulido there for more games would have had him not fighting till the last minutes on decision day. You know, they would have probably already been going into that game with the Western Conference wrapped up. So super disappointing, but you know, ultimately this needed to happen. Alan Pulido has just been managing this pain all of last season. This season, if he had delayed the surgery at all, probably would have looked the exact same as last season. So this was something that, while it is tough for the fans, it's tough for the club, it's the best possible case scenario for Alan Pulido if he wants to get the most out of, you know, this next part of his career as he enters his 30s. So it's unfortunate, but Sporting Kansas City now, Peter Vermeer is saying that they're looking to sign players in just about every single position group except for goalkeeper. So I would imagine they're going to look for answers. It's just a matter of what is that answer when you've got all three of your DP spots filled. So,
and that's the tough part. That's what Tom was telling us earlier. Is like, hey, this is not a situation of like, all right, injured reserve for Pulido, go out and get whatever you want here. There are limitations. That's probably why you saw him taking Berich in the in that reentry draft, but then you can't give Berich a DP contract, so maybe he says no. Peter said that's not going to happen. I've heard some rumors about Switzerland that they're searching everywhere. Like, what do you think is possible here? What do you think is a best case scenario or a realistic scenario? It's Kyrie, and then it's what?
There are a few different ways that I feel like this thing could go. Number one, I think best case scenario is that you're able to go out and sign sign a good replacement backup, someone who can maybe split some time with Kyrie Shelton, just depending on who they get and what they want that front three to look like. You know, Kyrie Shelton alongside Daniel Shalloway and Johnny Russell has been a pretty good solution up top for Sporting Kansas City if you have Shalloway and Russell producing at the rate that they did this last season. We've also seen Gadi Kinda play a false nine. He'll, of course, miss part of the beginning of the season with a minor knee injury and surgery. But, you know, we've seen that as an option as well for Sporting Kansas City. So I think best case scenario is that they go out and they find some depth up top and maybe someone who can come in and be a more true number nine. Kyrie's style is not, you know, he's not the big goal scorer for the team. He brings a lot. And it works well in Sporting system with the way that he plays and opens things up for the guys out on the wings. But, you know, it just kind of depends on who Sporting can go out and get. That's going to, I think, really kind of show us what their plan of attack is going to look like in 2022. But they also need depth out on the wings as well. And they need depth, you know, at wing back and center back. So I'm really curious to see, you know, who they're able to go get in and when these signings start coming through.
Couple guys they got done. Roger, 1 year deal. Zusi, a 1+1 with the option on the other side. It just didn't feel right. I see the pictures going around this morning. I was covering Sporting Kansas City in a different life when Graham Zusi got drafted. I remember the buzz cut, and he is just so different now, but he's a one club man. It didn't feel right to see him leave. Same thing with Roger. This just feels like his home.
Well, and both guys had great seasons for the club last year. I mean, you thought that going into 2021, Roger Espinoza would be just a sole depth piece kind of guy, bring him off the bench, but he played 32 matches, which was the third most of any player on the team. I don't think that was what anyone expected, but with Felipe Hernandez, of course, his season cut short and then just different injuries, Roger was the guy that Peter had to call upon, and he was up for it. Graham Zusi, you know, with Jalen Lindsay's untimely injury last year as well, probably played more minutes than they were anticipating. But I think, you know, both guys, it's amazing the shape that they've been able to stay in and definitely still have a lot left in the tank. That said, I'd be surprised if they were both going to, you know, play the same type of minutes that they did in 2021 and 2022.
That goes to what you're saying, right, about the transfer market getting some more players in. We'll have to see what happens there. By the way, comment from Anders, I still think we should have the chat live on YouTube. Who's more excited about these new contracts for Roger and Graham, the players or Weeby? It's not me. It's certainly not me, but I'm probably close. One other thing I'm excited for, and I'll let you go. Benny Failhaber. We know he's in the club. Weren't quite sure where it would be for him, but Sporting Kansas City 2 and MLS Next Pro, he will be the head coach. That's exciting. That's fun. That's what we like
it
to see. I love seeing former players, like standouts, come back in and be a part of this.
Well, and Peter joked yesterday, you know, Benny has been very vocal about how much he hates, like, conditioning. He hated running, despite being a midfielder in Major League Soccer. Like, guy did not like to run. And Peter was joking that now he's excited to have Benny kind of in his shoes, having to get these guys, you know, running laps and doing all the conditioning that he hated so much now as the manager. So, No, Benny's super excited. It's going to be great. I think he's really going to bring a lot of great stuff to this role and an MLS Next Pro, which, you know, we're going to see how that all shakes out here very soon. But yeah, it's exciting.
All right, Allie, great to talk to you. I'm sure we'll be chatting a ton on the Power Ranking show as that gets going this year. And of course, you can watch on the sidelines in Kansas City and here I'm maybe on TikTok soon. So we'll look forward to that. We'll look forward to that. Thanks for coming on.
I just do what they tell me to do.
Big thanks to Allie. I always love having her on the show. And we get the Power Ranking show on Twitter Spaces going once again. She'll be a frequent guest, as is the next person jumping on here. Another AT&T 5G call to the field. Felipe Cardenas of The Athletic. Felipe Carr on Twitter. Always here to talk Atlanta and so many more things. Felipe, what's up, man? How was your holiday break? It occurs to me I haven't seen you, haven't talked to you in a long time, but I have been like locked in on your Twitter account per usual.
It was good. I mean, I deleted my Twitter app for 2 weeks. I had to. Like, I was like, oh, I'm not going to check Twitter. And I kept checking Twitter. I kept doing the doom scrolls. I kept trying to stay in the know.
There's an addictive quality that I think we all understand, /fear, but have not yet been able to escape. So I commend you for your 2 weeks.
I force myself to, like, if I'm going to go to Twitter, I'll do it on my laptop, not on my phone.
Look at that. That's a first world sacrifice right there. If it's not going to be on my phone, I will not, under any circumstances, go to this on my phone. But when I have my laptop open, it is open season on Twitter. Well, one of the things I feel like I have underplayed in your ecosystem is this Barco Almada stuff. Like, it just feels like the Thiago rumors and, like, storyline, will he, won't he, oh, he will, stretched out for so long that we sort of spaced on the, you know, on the consequences of that actually happening. Like, is that happening? And if it is happening, where is Ezequiel Barco going? Because, again, there are only 3 DP spots to work with here.
Yeah, it's happening. I mean, Thiago Almada, he's going to be an Atlanta United player. I expect him to be in market soon. The club obviously has not announced the signing, and we had that strange sort of Twitter fiasco when Velez announced it and even announced a $16 million transfer fee. Then Atlanta United said, no, this is not finalized. So I think that's part of the drama. But you're right. You know, behind all of this is the fact that Ezequiel Barco has to be sold. And what does that mean for Atlanta United? You know, I tweeted this recently. You know, this is not the way they expected this to play out, where teams that are in for Ezequiel Barco, and when I talk to sources, there is interest. There's interest on both continents, South America, Europe. But in a depressed market, I don't think they're going to get what they expected to get when they signed him as a 17, 18-year-old for a record fee. And so now that's why you're seeing reports for Inter de Porto Alegre in Brazil, which is a big club, massive club in Brazil and South America. They have the funds, but they're looking for a loan. And it's like, so at this point, Atlanta United may have to consider that. They're considering all options, which could be something what they weren't expecting to do when they initially signed him. But the math is what you stated. They can't have 4 DPs. Thiago Almada will be a DP. I know there's a lot of questions and speculation about, is he a young DP? Is he a TAM? Is he? No, he's a DP. Like, he's coming in as a DP. So in that sense, Ezequiel has to be sold.
What should we expect of Thiago Almada?
I mean, he's a different player than Barco. When I talk to people that know him in South America, they light up when they talk about his talent. The next side of it is he a mature enough player right now, you know, as a person to come into this league, a new country? He's going to be paid a lot of money and perform right away. There were the stories about him not wanting to come to MLS. He wanted to go to Europe. Marseille really wanted him. It didn't happen. But for me, I think he can be a difference-making player. He can play on either wing. He can play centrally. He can play as a second forward. He is the type of sort of hybrid winger, modern winger that likes to get in the box and score. I don't think he's prolific, but I think he will be an upgrade to what Ezequiel Barco was consistently per 90 minutes.
It seems to me on Barco, and maybe they don't have this, and that's why it hasn't been done. If you a loan is fine, especially since you're not going to recoup what you had before. Maybe you let the market have a year to breathe. Like, if you could loan him out, he performs, and this is all ideal world. Maybe you get a little bit more money since there aren't solid offers right now. Like, do you think he could go to Europe, or is this like he's going to Brazil? That's sort of where the interest is. Like, that's where you should expect this to play out.
I mean, I think right now, today, us talking here, I think South America and specifically Brazil sounds like the right option. There were reports or like ideas of like, hey, maybe Sevilla comes in for Ezequiel Barco. Well, they signed, or they're going to sign, Tecatito Corona. I guess you could say they're in the same box as far as profile of player. Tecatito much more accomplished, more versatile. But a team like that in Sevilla that does really value young talent and they are savvy. They have a very savvy front office. Perhaps that was an option. But you're seeing more players throughout South America, even in MLS, with Eduardo Atuesta going to the big clubs, the high spending clubs in Brazil, the teams that are trying to dominate the region, like Palmeiras, the Copa Libertadores winner, Flamengo, Inter. You know, the thing with Inter Porto Alegre, which is linked with Ezequiel Barco, they have a new coach. They haven't been able to hang on to their coaches. And so they've signed a new coach, Jesus Medina, who's coming in from Argentina, a young Uruguayan, has an awesome nickname, El Cacique, the chief. And he doesn't have any relationship with Barco. So it isn't like, oh, I want Barco. But if it gets to the point where he picks up the phone and calls him and says, hey, I want you to be part of this project, maybe that's what gets the ball rolling. But to answer your question, I think, you know, South America looks like a nice landing spot for Barco right now.
How about Miles Robinson? You know, his reputation in our circles, MLS circles, U.S. men's national team circles, CONCACAF, is about as high as it can get right now. And this is the sort of time, based on what we've seen around the rest of the league, where you would sort of expect there to be solid reporting offers, teams of a certain profile in. And I haven't seen a ton of that. What do you attribute to that? Is that just happening behind the scenes? Is it not happening? Is Atlanta just saying, no, this is our guy. We're staying. He's going to be here. Don't worry about it. Don't even call us. Like, what's going on with Miles?
Yeah, well, let's start with Atlanta United. I mean, they've been pretty adamant through me, through a club source, that they don't have concrete offers for Miles Robinson. It's not that they're trying to duck the news or they're trying to evade anything. They just do not have concrete offers. That now, offers and interest are two different things. They're very adamant in saying that there aren't concrete offers for Miles Robinson. I tend to think that right now it's just not the right time for him. You have a new coach in Gonzalo Pineda who is going to build around Miles. Like, you want that sort of central defender there. It is a World Cup year. And, you know, when we talk to Miles throughout the season, he's never had this desire to go to Europe, like, at least publicly. You know, I think he wants to. Every player wants to. But he's not the type of player that's like, that's knocking on the door, that's pounding on Bocanegra's door and saying,
he's
hey,
not banging the drum.
Know. No, not at all. He loves Atlanta. He loves Atlanta United. He loves the club. He loves the city. He has made it to where he is with the U.S. men's national team playing in Atlanta, playing in MLS. And so that is the vibe I get from him, that he's content right now. And, you know, you asked about my vacation. I ran into Miles Robinson.
I was going to say, where's Miles Robinson happier, Atlanta or Puerto Rico? Which one?
Or Puerto Rico. I think he looked a lot happier in Puerto Rico.
That's
let's just
fair.
Be honest.
Yeah, that's fair.
He was there with his boys. It was a hilarious just, you know, encounter where I left the beach. I'm going to buy a drink. I ran into him with his friends. I tap him on the shoulder. And his first reaction was, oh, no. Oh, no. And that's when I told him, speaking of Twitter, I'm like, Miles, I'm on vacation. I deleted Twitter. You could move to Liverpool and I wouldn't even know.
Hey, man, my laptop's in the room. I couldn't get up there in the next 20 minutes if I tried, okay?
So it was a lot of small talk and just we weren't even talking about soccer. But he just looked like a guy that was fired up after the 2021 year that he had, fired up for 2022, and not desperate to move. And so that's where I think Miles Robinson stands right now.
That's interesting. May we all run into MLSers on vacation just for the stories, just for the opportunity to tap somebody on the shoulder and have them say, oh, God, no. Last one here for you. First year under Gonzalo Pineda, and he's starting it with, I would say, significantly less drama than the last couple years have had. But there still is sort of this other side where Joseph Martinez is asking for a new contract publicly and Atlanta's saying you already have one. Like, what's going on with Joseph? And then what do you think first year under Gonzalo is going to look like? First full year, I should say.
Well, let's start with Joseph. You know, the story I wrote last Friday, you know, I think what comes out of that interview is in my opinion, sincerity. Yes, you know, he's a savvy professional athlete, right? He gets his message out there. You know, I haven't talked to him in a long time. I haven't done an interview with him in, I think, a couple seasons now. And so, you know, the timing for him, I think he realized after the knee injury, after the season that they had, that, you know, perhaps he put in perspective his life. He's talked about that publicly. You know, he values his time here. He values his life, his freedom, the success he has. And he really does want to stay here. You know, I asked him straight up, you don't want to go to Europe. Is that door closed? You had interest in Liga MX. You would be a star in Liga MX. And he's like, I think so. Like, meaning that he thinks that door is closed for him. But he said, never say never. I just know that I would choose Atlanta 1,000 times over. He was very specific that he wants to extend through 2026, where, you know, he sees his career leading up to that important year here in North America as well. And Venezuela as a national team has a project in place that is targeting qualification for 2026 and a new coach in Jose Pekerman, who has already spoken with Joseph about his role in the national team. So it was very calculated. It wasn't just like, hey, I want a new contract. Like, he has the number down. You know, he knows where he stands within the top players and the goal scorers in this league. He believes he's at Carlos Vela's level right now. And I think as any perhaps star employee would go, when all of a sudden you're not the highest paid on the team, you start talking to your agent. And so Luis Araujo is now the highest paid player on Atlanta United, surpassing Joseph by just a bit there, but you can understand where he's coming from.
Yeah, it feels like a year where he needs to get back to old Joseph sort of production and swagger and place within the team and the league. And then that's going to be a much more convincing argument. For now, Joseph under contract, say Atlanta, sticking around. Quick thoughts. What do you think the right expectation for Pineda is this year in Atlanta?
I think it's seen. I think in 2022, we should be able to see his philosophy. Like, what does he truly want to do with this team? You know, you mentioned it before. I think this, they'll come into the season stress-free. Yes, the expectations of Atlanta United are always high, but I think there's even an understanding that this is a young team, that this is a team that went through a lot last year, that they're just still getting used to this new coach that they all like. He's got a good grasp on the locker room, great relationship with their star player, Joseph Martinez, who's had his issues with previous coaches. And I think last year, Pineda, you saw glimpses of what he wants to do, how he wants to attack, how he wants to push the team forward, and how he can dial it back when needed. But I felt like it really limited him as far as how much he put on the players. There are times where he was going back to basics because they were a team that didn't know how to close down games, that were losing leads, that were pushing when they shouldn't push, that were holding back when they should be pushing forward. And so those are things that I think he'll address in this upcoming preseason. And I expect the team to just be better under Pineda in 2022 and be a little bit more solid in key parts of the field and able to manage games that got away from them in 2021.
Yeah, certainly more hydrated as well. All right, Felipe Cardenas of The Athletic. Couldn't help myself. I'm sorry. Everything in Atlanta, everything in MLS, and all around the region as well. Love your work, man. Love following you when you're tweeting, whether it's from your phone or from a computer. This is a question and a very pertinent one that Tom Bogert had, and I must ask it myself. When on the beach, on vacation, in Puerto Rico, and in need of a beverage, what do you reach for? What is your order? I think I might have drank. I went for a record on mojitos in Mexico when I was there earlier last year, I should say. That's all I drank. Yeah, but maybe that was the wrong choice. What do you think?
My first drink when I got to San Juan, and again, I lived in San Juan 8 years. My wife is from Puerto Rico, so it's like home to me now. The first drink I ordered was a mojito, and I went an entire day drinking mojitos. Now, I like their local beer, Medalla. It's a great beer. And you can never go wrong with a pina colada, but I'm a mojito guy for sure.
That's music to my ears. Music to my ears. Thank you so much, Felipe. We appreciate you, man.
All right. Take care, guys.
All right. Big thanks to Felipe, always giving us the absolute inside information on Atlanta United. Let's hit some rapid fire, get to the mailbag. First off, RSL, some free agent signings. Scott Caldwell over from the Revs. Justin Miram is back. Made sure he was sticking around. A nice run for them at the end of the season. This is a topic that I threw in the rundown, Tom. Jonathan Rodriguez. I had never thought that he might be an MLS. I would love for him to be an MLS. He might have been with LAFC, it seems, but then it didn't happen. Explain.
Yeah, LAFC were seriously interested. They've had him on their radar for a long time. They made an offer, but he ended up joining Al-Nassr because the allure of playing with PT Martinez, I imagine, is too big to deny.
Oh, well, PT Martinez, maybe he comes back to Inter Miami in the allocation order. I'm just saying, why not? Let's do a little switcheroo. How would that have worked, though? Like, I'm just trying to imagine, just for the sake of imagination, you have Carlos Vela. He's playing in the right wing spot. You have Chicho Arango. He is your forward. Maybe you have two forwards. Maybe you play Rodriguez as like a left-sided tucking in second forward on the wing. I don't know, man. Maybe, I don't know.
I straight up have no idea how you play Brian Rodriguez, Chicho Arango.
I forgot about Brian.
Jonathan Rodriguez and Carlos Vela without sacrificing the midfield or asking Ilya Sanchez to play like three people.
Well, we will have to find out. That is just a rumor to think about, something to tuck away in the folds of your brain. Here's another. I have a lot of Tom Bogert screenshots in this here. Here's Tom on Yunus Nnamdi. He has a new team. That's the Rapids DP. He signed by former FC Cincinnati GM Jared Nijkamp to Sparta Rotterdam. That is a perfect MLS sentence, we'll see what happens. DP spots for the Rapids. How much time have you spent with Robin Fraser, Michael? Was he with Chivas back in your days?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I met Robin first at the Super Draft, at the Combine, and he was at Salt Lake, And it was the year before they won the championship with Jason Kreiss. And then Robin was our coach. I think he got the job in 2011. And his assistant was the one, Greg Vanney. So I've known Robin a long time.
Yep, big link together. Speaking of LAFC, as we did there, they're going to host the CONCACAF Champions League game, but NYCFC will be the home team for that. It is a little convoluted here, but they're going to be in LA to take on, I believe, the Galaxy. So they're already in LA, having the stadium issues. We know about that. So decided to play at the bank. You know, it is what it is. I feel for the fans most of all. Just won MLS Cup, want to see CCL to start off, but look, I would think hopefully that they'll get through and you'll get another opportunity. The other wrinkle here with the Revs are that they're going to host Haitian side Cavalry both times, both games in Foxborough. That's just a reality for Cavalry. Houston Dynamo hires goalkeeper union Jimmy Nielsen and Zach Thornton are on the staff there for Paulo Nagamura. And Chris Martinez, shout out to the Wichita Wings, is the other assistant for Paulo. Was Zach in Chivas? This is just becoming USA show right now.
Yeah, Big Z. So Big Z, he was a teammate, a friend, and a mentor. When I played with him, he won Goalkeeper of the Year and Comeback Player of the Year as well back in that 2009 season. He was a human wall for us.
Mike, did you turn down a job offer from them? Feels like you should be on this
thing. Yeah, what's it?
keep my phone on do not disturb until we get done with the show.
Perfect. Then everyone can get hired. Pat Onstad, Jimmy Nielsen, and Zach Sorten in the same sort of like soccer staff is a wonderful thing. Just three old, like hard as nails goalkeepers. It's beautiful. Here's one for you, Tom. What are the Chicago Fire doing with their last two DP spots? This is from Eric, I assume, in Chicago.
I have no idea. I'm surprised that we haven't heard more about this. They obviously have the money with Joe Mansueto. They have, you know, a large, extensive network between George Heights in Europe and the technical staff have really good roots in South America. I really thought that they would have had both of these kind of set and sorted by preseason starting. Given that there's no reporting out there right now, it doesn't seem that they would have these players kind of ready to go by next week. So I honestly have no idea.
Well, that's an answer. That's kind of where I'm at as well. Into the mailbag, 401-206-0MLS, extratime at MLSsoccer.com. I'll let you breathe on this one. We got one from Andrew in Kansas City. I think I know him, Michael. He wants to know about Sierra Leone and your general AFCON thoughts, your level of pride right now. I know you were rocking the colors under your dress shirt during the Super Draft the other day. Huge draw against Algeria. Where how you feeling right now? How's the country feeling?
Just national pride to... I thought of my family, my own immediate family in Sierra Leone, and just the amount of stories that are like that, people who have sacrificed for all of these players so they can go out and live their dreams, and now they're realizing their dreams on the biggest stage, AFCON. AFCON doesn't get enough love around the world, and just a team like Sierra Leone, the Cinderella story, they could be one to talk about. I'm kind of nervous about the Ivory Coast game. That's going to be a difference maker, and Equatorial Guinea, we're going to beat them. I'm going to put that out there in the universe.
That's the first time back in decades, and you just got the guarantees going. Help us understand, like, those of us out there, I covered Kai his whole career. There's a lot of us listening and in this world who have just seen this whole thing play out, and it is like a storybook.
Yeah.
What does he represent for Sierra Leone soccer, but also sort of feels like the country? Like, this is bigger than a game right now.
Kai Kamara, I don't say this lightly. You wouldn't know this until you go to Sierra Leone. Kai Kamara is one of the biggest commodities in the entire country. He could very well run for president of the country, president of the Football Federation. It's Kai Kamara. He represents hope for Sierra Leone. He's been there, done it all. He's played at the highest of highs, and he's an MLS legend. I know he's had his ups and downs within the league, but with Kai comes more than just goals. He's now giving back to the next generation. And to see how many of the current national team players who look up to him, I remember when we were in camp, they sought advice from him. He was almost like a big brother or an uncle figure for a lot of these players.
Oh, man. It's cool to watch this happen for him and for the rest of the MLSers in AFCON right now. Nuhu, he's running things. You got Jamiro Montero on the field. It's a great tournament. Go check it out. It's a great time to watch as well. That was like a kind of a layup for you, Michael. That was positivity. That was all the good stuff. Here's a little less positive. Jason Gibbons, can a team from Texas be relevant in the MLS Cup conversation in 2022? Tom, if you got thoughts, follow up on Michael. But I got to go to my guy. I mean, you can take the Verde glasses off if you want. You can leave them on. It's up to you. You got a choice.
I'm doing one lens of the Verde glasses on today. I'll spare you the rest.
Okay.
I think this is a crucial year for Austin FC. And during the super draft, I used the word redemption. But the question is, what is volume two of the Verde and Black going to be? New signings are stacking up. And from the midfield on, they look very promising, very dynamic. But now it's about the back line. There needs to be more insurance in the back line.
You didn't answer the question. Can they be relevant in the MLS Cup conversation in 2022?
Oh, man. Well, geez, I already gave my guarantee for Sierra Leone. I got to pick and choose when I do that.
So if they make the playoffs, I think
playoffs is something I expect from them this year. Out of all the Texas teams, I think they are the strongest team in terms of what you see on paper. Obviously, everyone talks about Q2, the atmosphere, the fans, which is awesome. But now they need to put it together on the field. They can't afford to have a Jekyll and Hyde performances. Year one, you get the excuses out of the way because it's year one. It's all new. But now they need to deliver. I think Sebastian Driussi and also the fact that they have depth up top, Maxi Ruti and Musa Gite, release the Moose. I think if those two can get goals and they can be reliable center forwards for Austin FC, then I expect them to make playoffs and be in the conversation.
Oh, I love it. How about the other side of that, Tom? What do you think about Houston and Dallas so far? Do you think that they'll be relevant in the MLS Cup conversation?
I'll keep it short and just say no. But I do agree with Michael that I think that of those three teams, Austin kind of have the, I guess, best chance, because there's a path. If they sign a really good center back, which is obviously not easy, that is a pretty dangerous roster. And if the expectation is playoffs, I'm not sure if I would say that yet, but at least challenging for. And then if you get there and you have that top end talent like Driussi and everybody else that you named, like that, that's a team that I think is definitely further along in the conversation than Dallas and Houston.
All right, let's finish it with this one. David asks, which team with a new coach will make the biggest jump up the table in 2022? Whenever you answer these questions, the key is, what's the starting point? Like, if you know, jumping, it's a measure of starting point to end point. So if you choose a team that had a decent starting point, you're not going to win this. It's got to be a team that really struggled. Who's the new coach that's going to usher in the best jump? And I'm just going to run in here so fast and take the easiest, most right answer in Toronto FC. 28 points last year. Bob Bradley, you heard what Michael Singh said. There are reinforcements coming. We know Insigne in the summer. Like, just Bob Bradley would have done this for me, but I think that's the easy one. You got some other options around the league here. Chicago could be an option for you. Cincinnati, if you're going for, like, you know, hey, improve the stock because you were down at 20 points at the very bottom. That's a decent one that you could go with. Paulo Nagamura, actually at 30, the Dynamo, I don't think, have as much room to grow, so to speak. Tom, who would you go with? The first-year head coach is going to have the biggest jump up the table. We'll just say in pure points, not by position.
Yeah, I mean, Toronto sees the easy answer and the correct answer, but kind of taking them off the board because, again, it's just kind of too easy.
Well, I took them off the board. You don't have to be backhand like that. You can just congratulate me for sound analysis.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. That's the answer. But I guess just with the idea of the room to grow, it's got to be Cincinnati. Literally all they need to do is not finish bottom of the league again, and it's going to be an improvement. So that's the biggest room to go.
Any other name stand out to you? Michael, what do you think? Paulo, you know, you got Chirundolo, but they hit 45 points, so that's a hard one to go with and stick with. It sort of feels like we hit the easy one, so to speak. You know, that's an easy, because Cincinnati was easy for you too, Tom. I mean, I just want to say.
Like, I was going to say Cincinnati. I was like, please whiff.
What do you think on Cincy in this new regime? You played there. You understand that fan base. You were part of the media ecosystem. Like, what are you hearing from your people in Cincy?
I would agree with Cincinnati as well, mostly because the time is now. This is year four. It's time to deliver. They've gotten it right off the field. New stadium, electric stadium. We saw that so many ways with the U.S. national team playing there and what it looks like when they got that first win. And that was during part of, you know, one of the heights of the pandemic that they did that. And fans still go to games. These fans are rabid. Now they have to deliver. And I think Pat Noonan, out of all the coaches, the new coaches, he's a coach that isn't talked about enough. Talking to other MLS coaches, even before he got this job, and people in MLS soccer circles, I think he's a guy that will impart discipline. When he played, his career was marred by injuries, but he was just ruthless in front of goal, and he's a taskmaster, no nonsense sort of guy. And I think if he can impart that discipline and create that culture, and he's doing it with a guy that helped do that in Philadelphia, a guy that I know and played with as well, Chris Albright. So the pressure for him to do all that on his own won't be there. He'll just need to focus on the locker room and really the technical side of things with the team.
All right, we have one last question. There's a lot of Davids hitting us up, and he hit my text thread this morning. Reminder for everybody out there. Excuse me. Throw out a text the morning of shows. If you want us to talk about something, that is your opportunity. Get in there. Mm. Bother me. I listen. I screenshot. I drop it straight into the show. David G wants to know thoughts on where Ola, we already talked Josie, would end up in MLS if both are on their way out. I'm looking at Sporting Kansas City. I don't know if you can get Ola down off that DP number. I don't know if he's like a flex. Tom, if you know that, between TAM and DP, like, could he be eligible for TAM since they don't have three DP spots? If he could be, that would seem to be like a pretty good match, but also DC know that you're sort of over a barrel. So,
yeah, it just depends on how much, I guess, allocation money that Sporting Kansas City have at their disposal. One, to acquire Ola Kamara, and two, to buy him down, because I don't believe that he was a DP for DC United last year. And if he was, he was obviously able to be a TAM player. So he'd theoretically fit under the cap, but that would just take a lot of allocation money, both in acquisition costs and buying down his contract.
All right, that's it for us. 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. This is the end of, I guess you could call it, the, I don't know, a slower period in Major League Soccer. All the guys are on their way right now to training camps. The Revs are already opened up. They got CCL to worry about. We're going to start our season previews next week. We have 28 teams to talk about. We have a prediction show to do. We have a preview of week one. There's literally no time when CCL starts in mid-February, and February 26th is opening day. So season previews start next week. We will tweet at Extra Time, sort of the schedule there. We'll let you know what's coming. That way you can get mail-in questions. You can help us guide these previews to where you want them to go. All right. Big thanks to you, Michael, to you, Tom, for filling in, let's say, for two old hands and David and Doyle. And big thanks to our guests, Michael Singh, of course, on Toronto FC, Ali Trost on Kansas City, and Felipe Cardenas on Atlanta United, and so much more. That's it for us. We will see you on Tuesday. That's another note. Adios.